Geralto prodded. A goat! To the first person who suggests something believable, that's all I ask. There were murmurs, but no one answered. She took the chance to speak in a near whisper. Please, sir, let us speak in private, where I can manipulate your energy easier. The king continued to speak loud enough for the crowd to hear. If you mean to poison someone, there are countless ways that are better than apple. Tell the truth, princess. This is your last chance. There wasn't much anger in his tone, but she could feel it strongly from his energy. She needed time to think. If you refuse to meet privately, I will take my officer and leave. The king slammed his fist down on the armrest again. It's easier to put you in prison and have your father bring something to trade for you. He stood and pointed at his guards. I don't want to see her again until she's ready to cooperate. No one, not even my father, will come for me if I do not return. The armored men put their hands on her. She had half a mind to pain them, like she'd done in front of her brother's army when trying to get to the truth. Remembering how well that had turned out, they'd taken her to the torture chambers and nearly killed her, Beatrix decided to cooperate this time. She wouldn't flee this place without Kurnitch anyway. A message will be sent to your father if you do not cooperate, and I will deal with him from now on. They still didn't know she was a psychic. Perhaps she might be able to use that to escape. The king did seem to know the whereabouts of apple vines, and they obviously meant nothing to him. It was likely they weren't in the castle, but somewhere she could reach with Dessel and Kurnitch. She just had to get out of here. Beatrix tried to explain to the guards, practically carrying her out of the throne room, that her father was at war and sick. He wouldn't be able to come here to negotiate her release. I will cooperate with Geralto, though, she added. I will speak to him whenever he has time. When they did speak, no agreement would be met, and she would leave. They just had to have the meeting. The guards didn't say a word as they led her through the corridors. It wasn't long until they came to prison cells that hardly seemed separate from the rest of this place. 10 doors without windows, 5 facing each other, made up a hallway that appeared no different than the others. One guard unlocked a door and the rest pushed her inside. Does anyone in this place have the decency to do something about an injustice? She yelled as they slammed the door. She heard them walk off, even as she continued to yell, Where is Kurnitch? She waited, but there was no reply. She checked her new surroundings. Her cell was small. She could only take 4 steps in any direction before reaching a wall. There was a bed of straw with a grimy bucket beside it. A barred window was too high for her to see out of until she climbed onto her bed. She went up for a look.
Beatrix!
It was Kurnitch calling to her from somewhere nearby.
Yes, where are you?
I think I'm in the cell next to you.
Beatrix tried to look down out the window, but she wasn't tall enough. All she could see was sky and mountains.
How high are we?
Not very. We're on the ground level.
She could hear hope in his voice. Dessel would come for them eventually, but first he had to figure out where they were. How long would he wait in that cave before he decided to come for them? A day at least, she figured. It was cold in the cell, and she was already suffering from hunger and thirst.
It's going to be fine, she told herself.
The king would make sure she was fed. But fear crept up as the hours passed by without anyone coming to check on her.
I am ready to cooperate,
she announced several times after explaining to Kurnitch what had happened.
I wish to speak to King Geralto, and we require food and water.
Beatrix,
Kurnitch said eventually in a dire tone.
He's doing this on purpose. You should save your strength. Rest if you can.
He's not going to leave us here to die.
She spoke both of the king and of Dessel.
But I suppose resting is a good idea nonetheless.
She closed her eyes and prepared to put herself to sleep with Psyche. She'd been manipulating her own energy too much since she'd come here, possibly creating a dependency, but she didn't see how else she could fall asleep through her terrible hunger and thirst. It was night when she awoke. She wasn't able to see a thing. She crawled around her small cell, hopeful that someone had come in and left a tray of food and water, but there was nothing to find on the cold ground. She was shivering by the time she got back in bed. There was no blanket, no pillow. The wind had picked up, fighting to enter her cell as it screamed past her window. It was her thirst that bothered her the most now. Her throat was full of needles. She would put herself back to sleep again, though she would wake soon from the discomfort. She wanted to call to Kurnitch to see how he fared, but he was right that they would need their strength. Besides, she wasn't sure she could make a sound loud enough for him to hear over the wind.
She wanted to kill Carolto. Her heart trilled as she thought that it might actually be possible. If she could convince him to meet, she could certainly find a way of obtaining a knife, paining his guards and stabbing him until he was dead. That should be easy. Escaping would be the hard part. She fell asleep to the comforting thoughts of thrusting a blade into the king's fat chest. Chapter 5 It was tempting for Dessel to walk to the citadel and ask about Beatrix and Kernich, but this would be a foolish decision for a number of reasons. If they had been killed, then Dessel's wish to free them could be taken as a threat. He would be killed too. But if they were still alive and only imprisoned, the risk was less. Dessel would either be sent away or imprisoned like them, unless, of course, the people of the citadel decided to kill him. Beatrix and Kernish had tried to keep the portal they'd taken here a secret, in case it wasn't supposed to be known, and for all Dessel knew, they had succeeded. However, if Dessel showed up right after Beatrix and Kernish, this might cause the people in the citadel to be suspicious as to how Dessel got there so quickly. It normally took 3 days by boat to cross the sea between Ovira and Greenedge. There were too many unknowns for Dessel to take the risk of approaching. He decided he would observe what he could before he came to a plan. That required climbing somewhere high, not usually a problem, except it was in this weather. His armor and his cloak protected him some against the wind, but he still might freeze without a coat. But what else could he do? He'd been through this cave enough to tell that there was nothing here he could use for warmth. Out of ideas, he ate his breakfast of uncooked beetles, and set out with nothing but his cloak and leather armor, a flask of water, and the small hope he wouldn't freeze. His two comrades had already been in the citadel for a day, making him wish he'd done this earlier. He refused to believe they were dead, though the thought did enter his mind many times as he left the cave and started up the side of the mountain. Snow had collected in the natural handholds, so Dessel was forced to create his own, by softening the rock and shoving his gloved hands and feet into it each step of the way. His teeth chattered. The wind was ice made air. It was hard to keep his concentration, but his fear of falling helped. He panicked when his foot slipped out from one of the holes. He cursed himself as he flailed. He'd made the rock too soft. His foot had pushed through as if the rock was mud. His power over the mountainside surprised him. Normally the softest he could make the rock was still so hard that he hurt his hands, stabbing them into the jagged texture. But now he had to hold back or his limbs would slip through. He found the right level of manipulation to continue without worry, and eventually came to the top. The rock was flat in many places here where hard snow had collected. Dessel tested each step before putting his full weight down, ensuring there were no hidden holes. The snow fell into a crevice as he prodded an area with his foot. It was so deep and twisted that Dessel was nearly certain he would break a leg if he fell. He kept his distance from it as he walked around and soon found the best vantage point to observe the citadel. The mountain Dessel had chosen was just taller than most of the citadel, but he still couldn't see over its enormous towers. The place was a fortress, so the field of bones must have had to do with a battle after all, for this citadel appeared to be built to withstand an attack. Its walls were thick, with many slits for archers to shoot from. A long and thin bridge was easy to defend. Even if attackers made it to the huge doors that appeared to be the only entrance, there were countless places from which to shoot arrows and fireballs down onto them as they tried to ram it. The citadel received a number of visitors, Dessel saw. There was a slow trickle of people either headed across the bridge toward the doors or on their way back. It seemed they were all attempting to get inside as if they sought the protection of these walls. The cold was getting to Dessel, making it difficult to think. His feet felt numb as he stood ankle-deep in the snow, his shivers turning violent. He made himself ignore it as he tried to figure out this place. What else could these people want by visiting the citadel if they didn't seek shelter? He watched them for what felt to be an hour and eventually noticed a pattern. Those with cargo, always on horseback, were let in, while those who apparently had nothing were turned away. It seemed to him that these people were offering payment. It was also clear that no one left the citadel who had been let in. There were too many entering for all of them to be staying there. There must be paying to go through the citadel, to something on the other side. Perhaps the land was more fertile there. He figured out his directions based on the sun. It was east, through the citadel, toward the sea, no doubt. The climate would be better. So what did that mean for all the people who didn't have food or money to pay for passage? Dezzel walked to the other side of the mountaintop for a glimpse the other way. There was a great frozen lake with many homes around it, reminding Dezzel of his home in Kaval. They probably fished in the lake. Some must have animals they used for milk, eggs, and when they were desperate, for meat. There were many other homes all around the land, which meant there were thousands of people living here, if all the homes were inhabited. But that seemed unlikely. The winter had probably brought on this temporary weather, otherwise there wouldn't be so many living in this harsh terrain. A forest piqued his interest. It lay north, less than 10 miles from here. The dense trees might keep out the cold well enough for people to hunt and forage there, perhaps even dwell. Dezzel put a hand over his stomach as it rumbled. He wasn't sure he could be up here much longer without freezing, even if he did have something more than beetles to eat. He would have to get close enough to the citadel and hope Beatrix and Kernich could give him some sort of sign as to where they were. It seemed to be the only option of helping them. But he had preparations to make first. He made his way down the mountain on the side other than the one he'd climbed up and turned north toward the forest. He would have to wait until night to get close to the citadel without risk of being seen, but there was no way he could endure the cold in his current attire. He ran across the snow plains. It was the only way to find some semblance of warmth, which came in fleeting moments before the wind stole it away. He supposed he could have headed toward the frozen lake, in hopes of knocking on doors and finding out what he could about the citadel. But it was even farther than the forest, and he had nothing to offer these people to gain their trust. Even if one of them did have an idea where Beatrix and Kernich might be, within the fortress, none would spare a coat that would allow Dezzel to get there without freezing during the night. Dezzel was slow running through the dense snow. It was even worse when he came to patches of ice. By the time he reached the forest, the sun was in descent. It left him very little time to find what he was looking for. He rushed through the forest, painfully aware that all his energy came from measly fee-beetles. He started to feel dizzy, wishing he'd taken the time to bring at least a dozen dead ones with him. Parts of the forest were still green beneath the tallest trees, snow frosting on every outstretched limb. Tracks would be easy to follow. He just needed to find some. He ignored the paw prints that were as small as his fingertips. A rabbit might feed him decently enough, but he didn't come here to be fed. If this was indeed Goldrum in Greenedge, as he thought, then there should be many animals that would suffice. Even here, during the winter, the animals were as prevalent as they were dangerous. Goldrum was known for its large cities, yet less known for the people outside the cities, who hunted, fished, and gathered when they weren't farming. Dezzel thought he felt movement behind him. He spun around to stare into the bright blue eyes of a snow leopard no more than a few steps away. Dezzel barely had time to take out his sword as the spotted leopard jumped at him. It was fortunate that the deep snow slowed the beast, or the leopard might have landed on top of Dezzel as he fell backward. Instead, it opened its jaws to maim his leg. He got the point of his sword between his flesh and the beast's maw, making the animal taste steel and blood. The leopard drew back, only to turn around as if to pounce again. Dezzel softened the snow beneath the leopard with his mind, turning it to slush, but the quick beast was barely slowed, its feet scampering for purchase and pulling its body out toward Dezzel as he was just starting to get up. He stuck out his sword for protection. The beast leapt again. It managed to swipe away Dezzel's sword mid-air. Dezzel rolled across the snow to avoid being landed on. The snow sprayed up, blocking his view. He swiped strongly through the cloud and felt his blade connect with bone. As the snow fell, the leopard hit the ground with a thud. Dezzel's blade lodged in its head. It was dead. He felt instant remorse, his eyes stinging with tears that threatened to freeze. He quickly wiped them on the back of his gloves and got to work on the corpse in front of him. There was a lot that needed to be done, and all would be difficult with this hunger and cold. It took a while for him to make a fire. Without the heat of bastial energy to aid him, it might have been impossible. He removed the animal's thick pelt and cut away the small pieces of flesh that had remained attached to it. He stretched it between sturdy sticks he'd positioned in the ground so the pelt could dry near the fire. There was more than enough meat on the carcass to fill his stomach today and tomorrow. He cut chunks away and placed them on a stick that he held over the flames. By the time he had finished eating, he was filled with new energy.
But night had come, so there was little he could do besides sleep. It wasn't worth going all the way back to the cave for that, so he settled on top of the cold snow. He had no blanket, only the fire to keep him warm. It would be enough, so long as he woke many times to keep it aflame. It was best not to sleep too deeply anyway, for another creature might want to make a meal out of him. So instead of resting completely, he sent his mind into the other plane. He'd gotten used to the sensation of falling when he tried to go deeper, but he still hadn't figured out how to keep himself from dropping out of the plane and back into the physical world. He managed to go a little deeper before falling out each time. He felt things he couldn't explain, like a sensation of fear, but also of wanting something. The strongest sensation was a familiarity with someone, possibly either Fatal or Lyda, but Dazzle had his doubts that it was either of them. It felt more like a familiar place calling to him, like the feeling of returning home after a long time away. Besides, he figured Fatal and Lyda were too far for him to feel anything from them. It almost seemed as if something was trying to reach out and grab hold of him before he fell out of the plane. He reached out as well, feeling himself getting closer to latching, closer to staying. Dazzle had only spoken to Fatal once in his life outside this plane. The leader of the elves had given Dazzle the impression that Dazzle had great potential of some kind. He'd invited Dazzle to go with him and the elves, abandoning the humans. In exchange, Fatal would teach Dazzle how to reach his potential. He'd claimed this was the only way Dazzle ever would. But if there really was potential within Dazzle, he would reach it on his own, as he had been doing ever since his father left this world. He was tired when morning came, but he felt as if he'd made progress in this other plane. Fire had melted the snow on the ground around it, as well as dried the inside of the pelt. Without all the supplies and time Dazzle needed to tan the coat, it might develop rot in some places, and it wouldn't be as flexible as it could be. Nevertheless, Dazzle would wear it proudly for now, the warmth immediate. He looked forward to seeing Beatrix and Kernich's faces when he saved them in his new coat. Actually, he looked forward to seeing them again, and not just for their reactions. First, he had to find them. Now, with enough warmth, he could sneak around the citadel at night. The Ackerel should be safe within the walls of the cave, so Dazzle would now roam the land around the citadel as he waited for night, attempting to figure out as much as he could. But before leaving, he cooked more of the carcass. He cooled the meat with snow, then pocketed it. He would eat it slowly throughout the day. This cold weather drained him quickly. He needed all the energy he could muster. If he was fortunate enough to find out where Beatrix and Kernich were in the citadel tonight, it still meant they'd been there for 2 days. They could both be weak if they weren't fed well. If Dazzle encountered bad luck, it might take another day, or even two, for him to break them out. This was all assuming they were prisoners, which was the best he could hope for. Chapter 6. The battle had ended hours ago, but it already felt like a distant memory to Lyda. She was glad Dazzle, Beatrix, and Kernich had taken the Ackerel with them into a portal. Lyda's father had wanted her to jump in after them, but she'd hesitated as the elves had closed in. She didn't want to separate from her father to join the others, for she and Dazzle should be able to communicate through the other plane while apart. There was little point of that if only Basin was elsewhere. But Lyda had since tried to contact Dazzle without success. She eventually came to the conclusion that he was just too far. It seemed that even the leader of the elves couldn't reach him. Lyda had felt Fatal in the other plane with her several times, searching like a dog with a hint of a scent. Lyda's friend Adria had stayed behind after the battle with her parents, Cleve and Rila Polkan, and the rest of the Wind Knights. There was no doubt in Lyda's mind that Adria would go back with the Wind Knights to continue fighting the war against Tenred. It was the only option for her, at least for now. Fatal had been honest when he'd told everyone that the only way Lyda and Basin were leaving Meriyuk alive was if the Ackerel was brought to trade for them. Lyda didn't see how it was possible for them to be rescued without it, yet she didn't want to be traded for it. "So we might never leave." Meriyuk was hundreds of miles away. The elves had come quite far just for a chance for the Ackerel. It was a surprise that they didn't opt to stay here and force Basin to tell them where he'd sent Dazzle and the others with the precious metal. She whispered to her father while they walked, surrounded by elves, "Why would they take us all the way back to Meriyuk?"
"I have no idea. But the more time we can give the three of them with the Ackerel, the better off we'll all be. Fatal might have you pained, Lyda." His voice was dire. "Just remember that he won't kill you. for he wouldn't risk going to war against Kiro.
Would there really be a war if he killed me?
It might not be any time soon, but someone with power will want vengeance against the elves if they kill you or me. You have to believe this, or Fatal won't, when he questions us with Psyche. Say it to me, Lyda.
There will be war if we die.
Good.
She still wasn't sure she could believe it, but she would try her best. Fatal had turned around ahead of them, staring at them as he waited. The elf had straight, silver hair glistening as it caught the light of the morning sun. There was no way to know his age. He was clearly past his teen years, yet not an old man, but where he was between those ages she had no idea. His soft features might have been described as friendly on someone else's face, but his rounded nose and chin only spoke of power and anger. It was the sharp stare of his eyes that changed the meaning of the rest of his face. Lyda looked down to avoid the elf's gaze, unsure why it frightened her so much. She couldn't tell if Psyche was involved or not. All she could determine was that looking at him might make him speak to her.
"Answer something for me, Basin," Fatal said to Lyda's slight relief. "How likely is it that the Akarul will be brought to me in exchange for you and your daughter?"
Basin took a moment before answering. Lyda knew that although her father had skill in resisting pain from a psychic, he had no way of hiding lies from detection.
"It's extremely unlikely," he said. "And even if it were to happen, it would take months. You are not likely to get what you want by keeping us. Yet I definitely won't get what I want if I release you. I have another question for you to answer honestly. If someone eventually does bring the Akarul, and I demand that they carry the Akarul within Merik, then wait outside our territory for you and your daughter, would they agree?"
Basin didn't reply.
"Father,"
Lyda urged him, not wanting to test the leader of the elves.
"It's a difficult question,"
Basin admitted. Fatal said,
"If this simple question is difficult for you, then everything that is to happen soon will cause many problems. Get stronger and smarter, Headmaster, or either you or your daughter, maybe both of you, will not make it through this."
Basin then spoke quickly.
"The answer depends on who brings the Akarul. If it's a group of Wind Knights, then..."
He paused.
"I believe they'll need a guarantee that Lyda and I will be released, and then they will leave the Akarul and wait outside your territory." "You lie!"
Lyda was startled as Fatal stepped toward her.
"Wait, it's not a lie,"
Basin insisted.
"Then explain the doubt I feel from you. I just don't believe the Wind Knights are the ones who would trade the Akarul for us, like I said earlier." "Then who would bring the Akarul to trade for you?"
Lyda knew the answer. Dessel.
"The three who have the Akarul now might be the only ones who would trade it for us."
Her father was silent for a breath.
"And my wife, if it ever came into her possession."
It was the first time he'd sounded forlorn in front of Lyda since their capture. She'd had a feeling that his hopefulness was an act. And now she was certain.
"You must realize that you are going to tell me eventually where you sent them,"
Fatal reasoned.
"You might as well make it easier for all of us, especially your daughter, and tell me now."
Basin said nothing. He stared at Fatal as if the elf's eyes didn't frighten him as much as they did Lyda.
"They are not on this continent any more," Fatal said. "I know this for certain. What I don't understand is what reason you have to delay telling me their location."
"So Dessel and the others can get as far from the portal location before Fatal forces my father to make another portal there, this one for the elves. I do hope they know to move quickly." The transport of the heavy Akarul would be difficult without horses. It would take Dessel and the others twice as long to travel the same distance that they could cover without the Akarul.
"Fine,"
Fatal said.
"You can keep your secret for now, only because we have enough Akarul with us for only one portal, and my elves are eager to return home. You will give me your Akarul bracelets now, though, for charging."
It was a surprise the leader of the elves hadn't taken Basin's bracelets already. Fatal held out his hand expectantly. Basin looked over at Lyda as if wanting to protect her, then removed his bracelets one by one. There was a large rock on each of them. Inside, the Akarul metal slowly absorbed bastial energy until it glowed bright, even through the stone. Both had been used recently, one to get their full party of six out of the Direct Mountains, where they had melted Akarul and bottled it before being attacked by Marrows. Basin's other Akarul stone had been used for an escape portal during the battle against the elves. A sudden crack startled Lyda. In the midst of the line of hundreds of elves in front of them appeared a portal. She turned to her father with an inquisitive look. He shook his head.
"Wasn't me?"
The elves walked into the portal one by one while Lyda stood watching, shocked, beside her father.
"I thought you were the only portal mage," she told him.
"I always figured there might be others, but I've never..."
An elf shoved Basin toward the portal. Lyda jumped forward to stay with her father, but mostly to avoid a push. Fathol was ahead of them, looking back with a smirk. Lyda still couldn't look into his eyes, gazing down at the grass. It was only when he turned back that she took a good look into the portal.
"Merriik,"
she figured when she recognized the elven architecture of a few buildings wavering deep within the portal. An elven mage stood beside the portal with both hands in the air, his fingers bent awkwardly. Keeping it open seemed to be a great strain, given his twisted expression. The edges of the portal vibrated as streaks of white light shot across it, just like when her father opened one. The elves hurried within, pushing Lyda and her father closer. Fatol got out of their way.
"You two before me," he ordered.
Basin waited for Lyda, so she jumped in before an elf decided to shove her. Vertigo struck her like a rock to the temple as she soared out of the portal. She landed on grass and started to roll. Hands got hold of her arms and pulled her up. Merriik spun around her, but all she could make out was the blue sky, the green grass, and the white walls of buildings. She let an elf guide her away from the portal as she heard her father grunt behind her. Everything came into focus. Lyda had never been to Merriik before, but she recognized it from what she'd heard from Adria. Lyda had wanted to come with Adria when her parents took her here to visit Rila's elven brother Vitos. But Basin was concerned that Fatal would want to use Lyda against her father, so Basin opened a portal to Merriik for the Polkan family while he and Lyda stayed behind. They'd heard from Adria later that Fatal was upset by Basin opening a portal into Merriik without permission. He ordered that Basin never do it again, but Basin wasn't there to hear the order. He had already set a plan with the Polkan family that he would open another portal in 2 days' time for them to return to the Academy in Kiro. With no way of stopping it, Fatol had to accept that it would happen. At the time, Lyda didn't see why this should anger the leader of the elves so much. But now it was clear. Fatol was not used to being powerless. Was this the moment when Fatol decided he needed to figure out some way of stopping Basin from opening future portals? It was years ago when the Polkans came here to visit Vithos. Plenty of time for Fatol to hone his skills in the other plane. Lyda hoped that one day she would be powerful enough to stop him from preventing her father from opening portals, but it had better be soon, for a portal seemed to be the only way they would get out of here. Merriik was beautiful, upsettingly beautiful. This place would be Lyda and Basin's prison, but all around them was wondrous woodwork. The elves had built their homes into the hillsides so that wide arches below triangular roofs seemed to lay half-hidden among the lush trees, as if the buildings had come to be naturally. There were many towers in the midst of it all, a few stretching high above all else in the distance, except for the mountain behind them. A waterfall, seemingly as high as the clouds, fell from the mountain top, where it splashed against smooth rock and split into three other waterfalls. Lyda couldn't see where they went, behind the elven architecture, except for one that became a calm river, splitting a dense growth of trees down the mountainside. When Adria and the other Polkans had come back from their trip here, Adria had explained to Lyda that Basin's portal had put them right outside Fatol's quarters. It was probably the primary reason he had been so upset, but that was the only place in Merriik where Basin could make a portal. The leader of the elves lived high above everyone else, beside a lake where one of the waterfalls ended. Lyda would probably never see Fatol's home. She expected her prison to be somewhere underground, perhaps miles from this spot in the center of vibrant life. Nearby farms, some with crops and others with livestock, were sectioned off by fences around them. A group of elves crowded leisurely around a well. Many elves had come to greet those arriving with Fatol via a portal, the soft and rhythmic language of Elvish fluttering around. Basin put his arm around Lyda's shoulders.
"Try not to be scared."
But his words only caused more fear. She knew what he was really saying. Be prepared to defy Fatal. Be prepared for pain. She would be courageous not just for her father, but for the cause she believed in now. They could still end the war between Kiro and Tenret. They had the Akaral. Well, three of them did. Those three only needed enough of the apple vines, and they could bring both the Ackerel and the apple to the Wind Knights to build some sort of device that could cause an explosion. The threat of using it to destroy the castle of either king who didn't agree to peace should put a swift end to all battle. Whatever happened here to Lyda and Basin should have no effect on that. She had to remind herself of this whenever she felt like giving up, which she figured would be often. She overheard Fatal speaking to a group of elves, recognizing the word Ackerel several times. At catching Lyda listening, Fatal gestured at her and her father as he said something to his elves. Five of them surrounded her, another five around Basin.
"I didn't realize we were so important," Basin said sarcastically.
None of the elves responded. They brought him and Lyda through the village. It appeared to be enormous, with Lyda spotting homes even on the distant hills. She wondered if many elves had come here from Meritar in Greenedge, since Fatal had first come to re-establish a village here. According to Adria's mother, Fatal was just a child when he had to leave this place the first and only time he had been here before. Kreps had killed all of his kin except for those who made it out by ship. It was certainly the start of Fatal's hatred toward the Kreps, but it seemed that he'd developed a hatred for humans as well since then. The 10 elves with Lyda and her father stopped outside a building that was larger and far more extravagant than the elven homes they'd passed. There was an entrance of stone arches that led to the enormous structure, which was lined with tall windows made of glass. This couldn't be their prison. The elves ushered them inside and through a wide-open room that seemed as if it could be a meeting place for elves. There were several sets of spiral stairs that led to the upper floors, but the elves marched Lyda and Basin through the lower level instead. Soon they arrived in a beautiful one-room library. The room itself was large, with bookshelves too high for Lyda to reach the top. There must have been more than 1,000 books in total. The elves left their prisoners here. Basin tried the doorknob. It was locked. There was a great commotion outside the door, like furniture being moved around. Lyda and her father explored the library briefly. Many of the books were in common tongue. Eventually the commotion came to an end. Someone unlocked the door. Basin edged forward to put himself in front of Lyda as the door opened.
"God's mercy, Vithos? Is that you?"
"Basin."
The elf opened his arms and stepped in, but stopped when he realized he had forgotten to close the door.
"Wait!"
He turned around and shut it, then turned back and lifted his arms high.
"Basin."
Some of the elves, like Fatal, had almost no accent, but most others did, a lilt to their words that seemed to soften them. Not Vithos. His accent was harsher, as if he spoke more from his stomach than his throat, but his wide smile put Lyda at ease. His hair was tied behind his back, his eyes were friendly, he looked around the same age as Fatal, anywhere from 30 to 50, though Lyda knew Vithos had to be closer to his 50s than his 30s, because the elf had known her father for 25 years. "He's the brother of Adria's mother, half-brother," Lyda reminded herself. He had chosen to live here rather than in Kiro, and he wouldn't be in this room right now without Fathol's permission.
"This is my daughter," Basin said. "Lyda."
She reached out to shake Vithos' hand, but he grabbed her and pulled her in for a surprising hug instead.
"Lyda, it's a pleasure."
"A pleasure,"
she wheezed out.
"You are closest friend to Rila's daughter, yes? I know you."
He stepped away to look at her face. He tilted his head toward Basin as if surprised by what he saw.
"She's very beautiful, headmaster. She really yours?"
"And why is that a shock?" Vithos laughed.
"I tease. It is good to see you, headmaster, very good."
He gave Basin a hard slap to his back.
"And you as well,"
Basin said with what sounded to be a nervous chuckle.
"But let's not forget that we're here as prisoners. I assume Fatal sent you in here?" "I want to be here,"
Vithos argued.
"But Fatal did send you?" "Yes,"
Vithos pretended to shiver.
"He's a scary elf. You know you must do what he wants."
"What does he want?"
"What did he tell you?" "That you took his Ackerel, and you sent it away in Portal. You know he has Portal Mage now? We found that out."
Vithos slapped his knee.
"I can't wait any longer to say it. I have a daughter, too. She isn't born yet, but will soon. My wife here and knows baby is girl. Maybe I bring her for you to meet when Fatal allows."
"Congratulations," Basin said.
He sounded genuine as he smiled. Lyda forced herself to forget her worries for a moment.
"Congratulations,"
she echoed. Vithos's voice was suddenly quieter.
Fatal made his mages train for years in hopes of one making enough powerful portal.
Bithos lifted his finger.
And only one can do it. Fatal hates you, headmaster. Why? He jealous?
Not jealous. You should remember why. You were with me when he tried to kill me.
That? Only that? That was so long ago.
Fatal never forgets.
But Lyda knew her father was exaggerating. It wasn't that Fatal hated him for something that had happened between them 25 years ago. It was that Basin was regarded as one of the leaders of the humans. There was rivalry between the races, not in the eyes of humans, but in Fatal's mind. Basin represented the human race to Fatal. This was a competition that would not end peacefully, especially now that the potential to create explosions was involved.
It's more complicated than that, Lyda offered. But can you free us, Vithos?
Me?
Vithos laughed.
I can do nothing. Will you tell Rila when you see her?
Tell her what?
Basin asked.
About my daughter. She knows of my wife already.
Basin didn't seem surprised by Vithos' sudden changes of topics, so Lyda assumed this to be normal for the excitable elf.
You should tell her yourself. Better yet, bring your wife and your child to Kiro. Help us get back there, Vithos.
Fatal would never kill you. You're an elf. I'm an elf, yes. I cannot betray my kind. I'm sorry, headmaster. I really cannot do nothing.
You mean you can't do anything?
Yes, I can do anything.
You...
Basin stopped himself from attempting to correct Vithos again.
Aren't you still allegiant to humans? We took you in when you escaped from the Krebs. You fought beside us.
I will never forget humans. But elves need to take much care for each other. We do not have the same greed as some humans, as some Krebs. We are in danger not from you, but from other humans. Fatal needs Akarl for our protection. He will not kill with...
Vithos seemed to be searching for a word. He mimicked the sound of an explosion as he spread his arms.
You can't be sure of that, Basin insisted.
No, but I'm sure that you will not leave until he gets his Akarl.
Vithos began to whisper.
He will hurt Lyda, and I cannot stop him.
But will he kill me or my father?
Lyda asked.
Elves do not kill unless we must. He will not.
Then I can handle any pain he causes me.
Vithos's mouth hung open. He looked to Basin.
It is very much pain, and it comes soon. Please don't. Let him have the Akarl, and there will be peace.
Someone else unlocked the double doors. Fatal opened both strongly enough for them to hit the walls on the other side of the doorway. He glared at Lyda as if she were his worst enemy.
"Did you explain the truth, Vithos?"
he asked without dropping his gaze from Lyda. She wanted to look away but seemed powerless to do so.
"Yes,"
Vithos said, then lowered his head to Basin.
"Please, headmaster, goodbye for some time now, Lyda."
He took her hand and showed her such a sincerely sad look that it was a surprise that no tears formed in his eyes.
"Sorry."
Vithos left, shutting the door after him. Then it was only Fatal standing in the doorway. Lyda wondered whether they might be able to kill him. Elves had taken her wand, but she could cast without it, with minimal risk of burning her hand. It was the same for her father. Fatal said,
"I need to know everything you know, Basin Hiller."
When there was no reply, he added,
"Fine. This could have been avoided."
Pain worse than Lyda could have imagined sent her to the floor. Chapter 7
"I will tell you everything I know tomorrow,"
Basin said. It was the second time he'd told Fatal this, but Basin could probably say it 100 times and it wouldn't make a difference. The elf could tell from Psyche if Lyda's father was being honest, which she assumed he was.
"You will change your mind,"
Fatal said as he stepped toward Lyda and pointed his dagger at her.
"I don't want to hurt her again, Basin. But sacrifices must be made to keep my elves safe."
She was panting as she wondered whether to try to stand, knowing she would just fall again.
"Sacrifices? You always call them sacrifices,"
Basin said with increasing anger.
"They are horrors, and you are a tyrant for using your power unjustly. The only elves who humans have ever hurt are those who came to Kiru to take our land and our lives, like your brother. The Akarl will be used to settle human disputes. It has nothing to do with you, your elves, or this place. It never will. So leave my daughter alone."
Patar sighed as if frustrated.
"I know what you're trying to do. You want to start a debate to delay the inevitable. You expect that I can't let your words go without a response, but you're wrong. There isn't time to waste as your humans get farther and farther from wherever you've sent them."
He made a claw, and aimed it at Lyda. A flood of pain rushed down her body. It stayed in her legs, crippling her as she let out a scream. Her muscles cramped, the agony as sharp as a needle. She grabbed her legs, tried to relax them from within, but the pain spread to her arms next. All her limbs felt ignited. She squirmed as she tried to find relief. Only when the agony was over did she realize that Fatal and her father had been yelling at each other as she'd screamed. She could barely make out their angry words, her ears ringing and her teeth stuck together from the immense pressure she must have put on them.
"The only thing that will come of this is pain to my innocent daughter,"
Basin had moved closer to Fatal, Lyda saw, now just 2 steps away from touching the elf.
"Father, it's all right," she said weakly.
"She lies, Basin. She can't take much more of this, and we've only just begun. You will tell me where you sent the Ackerel, why there specifically, and you will make a portal there for my portal mage."
Lyda was just getting up when Fatal hit her with another spell of pain. Her jaw locked as she sprawled on the ground, completely debilitated.
"Resist."
But all she could feel was this torture. The surprise hadn't allowed her to steel her nerves with any other emotion. It felt as if her body was under attack, the pain so terrible that the fear of death entered her mind. It didn't seem as if her heart could endure this kind of suffering. It was as if Fathol had put her face down on a bed of needles and now stood on her back. When the spell came to an end, she found herself hoping he would use the dagger in his hand instead. Psyche had seemed like the better option at first, but not any more. Anything else would be better.
"Her heart might stop if she's weak," Fatal told Basin. "I don't intend to kill her, but if she dies by accident, no wars will be fought over that unfortunate event."
Basin seethed.
"Oh, but they will, because I will kill you if she dies, or I will die trying. You're going to let me give her the worst pain of her life for the entirety of this day?"
"Yes."
But Basin's face softened as he looked over at Lyda. She quickly got up from the floor.
"Lyda."
"It's the right answer, Father. I will be fine."
She wiped away the burgeoning tears.
"Be strong."
She prepared herself for more pain by trying to feel something else, but all she could feel right now was a dedication to keeping Dezel and the Ackerel safe. She wasn't sure it would be enough. Fatal reached out his hand, and instantly she realized that it was not. She crumbled to the floor yet again. Now it was clear why her father so desperately had wanted her to go into the portal with Dezel. Her father could resist Psyche far better than she could. She couldn't even speak to Dezel from here anyway.
"I should have jumped into that damn portal."
She knew regret was somewhere in her heart, but all she could feel was pain. She started to gasp as if she'd been thrown into freezing water, unable to breathe. Needles pressed down onto every part of her body, her heart racing, everything blurred. She didn't have the breath to scream. When the pain finally subsided, she opened her eyes to the sight of her father walking toward Fatal with the knife somehow in his hand. He moved with slow determination, as if walking against a windstorm. Fatal was crawling the other way, his hand aimed at Basin. Fatal stopped where he was and lifted both hands. His face twisting with effort, Basin stumbled as he let out a yelp, but he found his footing and marched forward. Lyda got to her feet.
"Father, don't!"
They would both be killed as soon as Fatal's death was discovered. Basin got close and lifted the knife as if to slam it down into Fatal's head, but he stopped and threatened the elf.
"You will cease this pointless torturing! Promise me that it ends now."
"I will not,"
Fatal dared challenge.
"Go ahead and kill me. But you and your daughter will never make it to the portal location."
Lyda came up behind her father.
"Don't kill him."
Basin froze, then let down his hand.
"I won't."
Fatal stood up and straightened his robe.
"You made the right choice. Take a close look at that dagger, Basin."
Lyda came around to look at it with her father. It was blunt, rounded out along the edges and even more so at the tip. It certainly couldn't kill easily.
"You should also know," Fatal said, "that you cannot resist my psyche as well as you think you can."
He lifted a hand and Basin screamed as he collapsed and dropped the blunt knife. The spell was over a moment later.
I used to be able to resist you,
Thason said as he slowly got on his hands and knees.
You can't any longer. No one can.
Lydie got the sense the Fathole's power in the other plane had something to do with this change. Thason took a deep breath as he put his hand over the blade on the ground. He collected it as he made a fist, then took one more look.
You let me knock you down and take the dagger. I hoped you would. Why do that? What's the point? You and your daughter are going to be here a long time. I need to know if my life is in danger. You could have just asked. Your answer might have changed when you saw me slowly killing your daughter.
Lydia needed to know if she really was dying from the pain. It certainly felt that her heart couldn't take much more of it, but what could she or her father do? They would both die if they killed Fathole.
Now you know you won't kill me, which means you can't stop me. You must see that Lydia cannot last the day. She cannot last an hour.
Fathole turned his gaze to her.
There's no one that can outlast my psyche.
She no longer feared him. Lydia had already felt the worst pain, and she'd survived thus far. He might be right that she would die eventually, but without a chance of stopping him, what was there to be scared of? This was not a test of endurance, as she'd first thought. It was more like she was on a sinking ship. There was sadness, however, instead of fear. It was clear now that Fathole had won, and so quickly as well.
Fine. I will tell you,
Thason said.
Father, don't. Give them more time. I know I can hold on at least a little longer.
Thason shook his head.
I know you can, but I can't stand watching him do that to you.
She suddenly noticed the expression of suffering on her father's face. This might have been even worse for him than it was for her. Fathole formed a relieved smile.
You will tell me what exactly?
Everything you want to know. And then you will make a portal to the same place you sent the Ackerel, if the torturing is done with. It is so long as you cooperate.
Thason glared at Fathole.
What else will you want from us?
Everything.
Fathole shook his head as if upset at his own request.
Everything,
he repeated.
Everything you know about the Ackerel, the people with it, and the place you sent them to.
But that's not all, Thason figured.
There will be more,
Fathole agreed.
But it will be easy.
No form of betrayal is easy.
Fathole continued.
Start with where you sent the Ackerel.
The northeast of Goldrum.
Why?
Because it's far from you.
Fathole folded his arms.
Don't make this harder. Explain everything.
Thason gave a great sigh.
Although the country of Goldrum is controlled by the Tekaris, there are smaller kingdoms where other lords prevail, and the Tekaris let them rule because there is nothing there that Tekaris want. The weather is harsh where I sent them.
King Carolto,
Fathole guessed.
Yes.
So it's true that he can get anything he wants for a visitor if the deal is good enough?
I'm assuming you've never met him.
Long ago I have. We didn't speak more than a few words before I left. He should not be king of anything. You sent those three there to do what? Trade some of the Ackerel for apple seeds?
Thason was silent for a breath. He nodded.
I know when you're lying, even if you don't speak,
Fathole said with irritation.
Why did you choose to send them there if not to speak with Carolto?
Thason was reluctant to answer.
Speak,
Fathole commanded.
It must have been 20 years ago when I rode all across Greenedge with my wife and a friend, so you might sense some uncertainty when I tell you what I believe to be there. It is not a lie. I just can't be sure of what's changed since I was last there. We went to all the different kingdoms. I tried to establish a portal entrance in each one, but I have since forgotten some. I remember a cave near Carolto's castle, though. It was the home of thousands of fee beetles. We explored through to the end of the cave. I don't remember why. Perhaps we thought we might need the fee beetles if a new enemy showed his face in Kiro one day.
Your friend must be a psychic.
She is.
Fathole leaned his head back and squinted his eyes as if he'd figured out something.
I didn't know you had travelled across Greenedge,
he smiled.
This must mean you have done the same of Ovira.
Well, I didn't know why this seemed to make Fathole happy, but her father appeared to know. He hung his head as if he'd done something wrong.
Yes, I'm sure we'll discuss that shortly.
So this cave is where you intended your party to go when you sent them to Goldrum? What's there beside fee beetles?
Fathole asked.
If I remember correctly, there were many apple vines growing within the cave.
Fatal said something angrily to himself in Elvish.
You are lucky to find apple in Green Edge, where the Silgari cannot destroy it. So what do you expect these three to do if they decide to explore this cave and find the apple?
To then return to Kiru. Karolto has horses. They can trade a bottle of Akarol for three, then ride to the coast. There they could trade another bottle for safe voyage.
Fatal squinted.
You're keeping something from me.
We have other options, of course. But I don't remember the land very well. I'm trying to think of where else they can go or what else they can do to get back, but I'm not sure if any of the people I met are still there.
The psychic you spoke of earlier. Your friend. You believe she might be of help?
Possibly. Except I don't know where she is now.
Fine. Come with me.
Fatal suddenly seemed to be in a rush as he headed toward the door.
What now?
Basin asked.
You're going to make a portal to the same location where you sent my Akarol metal. If you're lucky, my elves will bring it back quickly, and we can be done with this today.
Lyda asked,
You would really release us if you get the Akarol?
Why would I want to keep you?
For security, in case something goes wrong later.
She wasn't sure she believed Fatal, but she hoped it wouldn't matter. Dazzle, Beatrix, and Kernich might have found the apple and left the cave already. It had been a few hours since Basin had made a portal that the three of them jumped into. They could already be on horseback, heading toward the coast. Still, she wanted to warn them. She would try again to reach Dazzle. She shut her eyes, but Basin took her by the hands and caused her to open them again.
"Everything will be fine,"
he assured.
"You shouldn't bother," Fatal told Basin. "She doesn't believe you."
How dare he?
Lydia wasn't sure she could hold in her fury. Out of everything Fatal had done to her, this angered her the most. Her father probably already knew that Lyda didn't believe everything would be fine. In fact, Basin probably didn't believe it either. But these reassuring phrases were all they had to comfort each other, and the elf had no reason to take them away. The pain he'd caused her, she understood. Even the malice toward her father, she felt like she understood. She might not agree with it, but she knew Fatal had his reasons. This she did not understand. Basin sucked in a quick breath.
"Damn you, Fatal! I have not thought of revenge until this moment. You should be careful of what you say."
Fatal looked bored at first until he glanced into Basin's eyes. The elf took on a serious look and surprised Lyda by what he said.
"You're right. What I said was unnecessary. I apologize."
Basin showed Lyda a soft look.
"It will be fine."
She tried to smile, but she knew it showed as false. They couldn't pretend any more. It didn't matter that Fatal had apologized. The damage was irreversible. As soon as Fatal left, she closed her eyes to shut out the distracting physical world. She focused on something beyond her vision, past the wall of black. It was difficult to move into the other plane when acute memories of pain plagued her thoughts. Images of Fatal's arrogant expression buzzing through her mind like flies made it even more difficult to forget where she was. She pushed harder and eventually broke through. Waves of energy with swirls of reds and yellows made up the land as far as she could see. She floated on top, unsure if she would sink down into it as if it were mud or if it was solid enough for her to stand on. She'd never been able to lower herself enough to find out. The times she'd tried, she'd failed and left the plane. This was not the right opportunity to practice, and certainly not the right time to fail. Dazzle had to be told the elves were coming to take the Akarol. But the moment she started to search for him, another presence entered the plane. He was right next to her, close enough to grab hold and powerful enough to keep her here as long as he wanted.
"Lyda, if I catch you here again, I will make you tell me of a punishment that will keep you out. Then I will give you that punishment."
That all gave her a chance to respond.
"I'm leaving as soon as I can."
She lied to him to give herself a few moments more to search for Dazzle. She could sense Dazzle, or at least she thought she could. The land seemed different in the distance where she assumed him to be. It was like seeing the wind move a windmill miles away. She couldn't quite feel the wind, but she knew it to be there. Fatal took hold of her spirit, or whatever she was, in this other plane, and she became helpless to move. She could feel him doing something to the energy beneath her as it started to jitter. Fatal ripped open the land. Beneath the energy was more energy. All of it opened, showing more and more that opened as well. Fatolf threw her in, causing her stomach to flip as she fell with tremendous speed. She felt connected to something within herself as she plummeted into the chasm. She welcomed the subterranean drop, but her mind was pulling her out as a sense of unexplained fear washed over her. Suddenly she stumbled back into the physical world. Falling to her hands and knees, she reached for whatever it was within her mind that she seemed so close to grasping, but it was as distant as a sweet dream fading from memory. Chapter 8 It had been 2 days since Beatrix had been stuffed into this small cell in Carolto's citadel. She had figured out a few things since then. He had put her beside Kernich on purpose. The king wanted them to be able to speak to each other. It was how they figured out his method of torture. Kernich told her that someone came by many times each day with water, but never anything to eat. Beatrix could hear him plead for food, but she never heard a reply. It was the opposite for her. They brought her more bread than she cared for, but never anything to drink. She didn't waste her voice asking for water after the first few instances of being ignored. She used her stamina instead to tell the guards that they should prepare themselves to explain her death to her father, because he would be coming with an army, and not negotiate a trade. It was a complete lie that depressed her to think about. Her brother was now the commander of the army in the realm, and he would be happy to hear of her death. Well, perhaps not happy, after all. Alifon had wished for her help to kill his untrustworthy councilman, Jimin Rofters, before Jimin found a way to kill him. It would probably be poison, like the two of them had used on Beatrix's father. The only liquid offered to her the first day was clearly not a liquid she could consume. She didn't want to think about drinking it, for she knew exactly what it was. She left the bucket in the opposite corner where her bucket used to be. Carolto was a sick man. Her thirst had kept her up most of the night. She left it to Kernich to speak loudly in hopes of Dessel hearing so he would know where they were. With Beatrix unable to reply, her protector was clearly lost on what he could say. If he shouted Dessel's name or called for help, it might be obvious that they expected someone nearby to rescue them. Instead, Kernich had to create some other purpose to speak loudly. He tried pretending to talk to Beatrix at first, telling her he would get food soon and she would get water even sooner. But it quickly became too repetitive and started to sound like he was mocking their situation. Eventually he came to tell stories of his childhood. She hadn't known anything of his past until then. Like many talented swordsmen, he was trained by his father. His early size and dexterity made it easy for him to make friends with other boys, but his anger made it difficult to keep them. Meanwhile, it was difficult for him to make friends with girls until he got older. He was surprised now to realize that his friendships and relationships with them tended to last longer than those with men. It was painful for Beatrix to reply to anything, but there were some moments when she couldn't let her curiosity go. She asked Kernich why he didn't have lasting relations with any women in the 5 years he'd been an officer, if he did in fact have friendships with women.
"I have,"
he said to her surprise.
"With 2 women."
There was a pause as Beatrix wondered something else. Fortunately, Kernich answered for her.
"No, not at the same time."
There was a very long break before he spoke again.
"But I lost interest in other women as I got to know you."
She wondered many things after that statement. Why had he acted so crude around her then? He must not have behaved this way around the other women, otherwise he never would have established a real relationship with them. It was only after he stopped fantasizing about bedding her that she started to see what kind of man he really was. She wanted to appreciate the sacrifice Kernich had made for her, and now for Basin as well, but she couldn't think of much else besides water. Her throat was filled with fire, her tongue made of sandpaper. They'd given her a sip of water this morning, delivered in an absurdly large water skin to give her false hope for a mere moment. It was just enough water to keep her alive through the day. At least it was a sign that they would let her live, though Dessel had better find them soon. Death was starting to feel welcomed compared to the agony of her thirst. Kernich still had not eaten anything. He didn't complain even once that day, though. He knew thirst to be a worse enemy than hunger. There was only so much a man could say without hearing anyone's reply, and less if that man had not eaten anything. They kept giving Beatrix bread until she started throwing it back through the hole in the door before they could close the slot. That was hours ago. She felt too weak to listen to Kurnitch, not that she was sure he was making sense any more. He seemed to be speaking of anything he could think of, random words and phrases, some from songs, but mostly strings of gibberish. Eventually he started making lists. He started with every colour he could think of. The list lasted a while, with Kurnitch mentioning many things that weren't really the names of colours, such as